This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Listen, because it's the two that really make the meter move, I'm going to give them the opportunity to tell you what we have in store in the way of a great gift, the stars of the show, Doug and Jess, in a moment. But let me remind you, they would love to hear from you today, especially for those last-minute gift ideas for the gardener in your life, or maybe yourself. You can give yourself a nice gift this holiday season. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. Here they are with some exciting news to begin the show. Doug Oster, everybodygardens.com. And Jessica Walliser.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from Everybody Gardens and the Tribune Review.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
And you could win $100 from Sorgles. Did you know that?
Today's
$100 day.
Oh.
Who do they have to call, Rob?
That's right. 412-922-1020.
You thought you were going to get out of it. Give the number again, please.
412. Because the way my luck is, I would screw it up, okay? 412-922-1020. 10th caller wins that amazing. And thank you to Randy and everybody at Sorgles.
Thank you, Randy. $100. So start.
Can I step out of the office for a minute here?
Just get on your cell phone.
Yeah. Where's my phone? That's all right.
Well, welcome to winter.
Yeah, right.
But the days are getting longer.
I see everybody celebrating the winter solstice. I've been seeing things on social media about it, and I think they're mostly celebrating the fact that the days are going to start to get longer.
Thank goodness.
Which we could all use.
That's exciting
already. It is exciting. And,
That's good.
The seed catalogs are rolling in, and I'm starting to, get a little itch for spring when the days start getting a little bit longer.
Well, it's going to be nice. It's going to be in the 50s. I actually have 300 bulbs to plant. I went to the nursery. I went to Han, and I was just like, "What's left?" She's like, "Man, I got some big bags. I'll give them to you cheap." I'm like, "All right." I gave everybody their warning.
Is that what you're doing today? Then planting bulbs
today? I don't know about today, but
okay, one of these days
coming
the ground
up where it's
freezes.
Nice. Yeah. It's funny when I lived at this house for 21 years, and I was just walking the dogs, and I just kind of looked down at this hillside, and I'm like, that would be the perfect place for bulbs. Why didn't I ever think about planting there? And I was like, that's where I'm going to put them. So I got a spot for them and a bunch of cool daffodils. I'm trying to cut a deal for some crocuses somewhere too. So we'll see.
Oh my God. Well, you're going to be surrounded in blooms, and I think it'll be lovely.
I just can't wait for the spring.
I'm sure you'll do a video of it. So we'll get to see the results.
I got
to
do a video of everything I do.
Yeah.
I don't do anything without doing a
video.
But it does
help. It probably helps you really get stuff done in the garden, right? If you know that you're going to have to shoot a video on it, then it sort of inspires you to do
especially
new things.
Especially this time of the year. Like, what are you going to do a video on? The last one I did was amaryllis, paper whites, microgreens, and testing your seeds.
All in the same one? You can't make like microgreens a whole one?
Yeah.
Or amaryllis
that's like
a
4 minutes.
One?
That's like a 4 minute video.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just did it that way.
You just do it, put it all together.
And one of those things when you tease it, they're like, oh, microgreens, maybe I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Or, oh, amaryllis, maybe I'll watch it. Or, oh, test my seeds, maybe I'll watch it. Maybe I won't. I'm going to go back to sleep.
Well, one of the things that I was excited to see, I got the Young Seeds yesterday, that catalog, and it's sort of like a big catalog that is paper. It's not like that glossy, shiny one like the Burpee seed catalog and stuff, but it always makes me curious because they always have sort of their new releases out on the front cover. And I was very excited to see one of my favorite fruits on the front cover that is practically unheard of here in North America. I think it's just starting to gain some traction. And the fact it was on the cover of that seed catalog says a lot. And it's called a honeyberry. Have you tried honeyberries?
I don't know what a honeyberry
is. Oh my goodness. They are amazing. So it's originated in like Russia and Siberia. So it's extremely cold tolerant fruit. It flowers like in late winter, and the fruit set is weeks before blueberries. And they look a little bit, they're the color of a blueberry, but they're elongated. And they have these yellow flowers that come out on the on bare branches. And the flowers look almost a little witch hazily, like a witch hazel mm-hmm. flower, like real spindly like that. And they bloom real early. And then you get this fruit set that starts like in May. And these berries are so sweet and they're so delicious. And I got two of the plants years ago when we moved into our house. And they started fruiting right away. You need a male and a female because the plants are...
Do the deer eat them?
The deer do not touch them.
Wow.
And they're deciduous. They lose all their leaves like the blueberries do. They lose all their leaves in the wintertime. And you need a male and a female because the plant is either male or female, like a holly, right? And to get the berry set. Well, so I had these two. And the first few years, I had good fruit set on them, even though the plants were small. And then the male plant died.
Mm.
So I have this female plant that's probably about three feet tall. Like it's a big bush and I need to get a male plant now, but I can't remember what variety the female was because you need to get like a compatible variety. The pollen has to be compatible.
Oh no, it's not the timing of the bloom.
Well, and that too, they have to be in bloom at the same time. So I have to figure out if I can find my old invoice for that. But I would encourage you, if you're looking for a fruit to grow that has like no pests, it's deer tolerant, it produces early, it's really flavorful, I would encourage you to plant some honeyberries.
Do you have a plant that you like as far as winter interest, like maybe exfoliating bark or a color or something during the winter? Because I love the exfoliating bark. I love paper bark maples, and Heptacodium is one of my favorites mm-hmm. for the winter. My Dawn Redwood mm-hmm. has got great bark. Is there anything that you have in your garden that you like for winter interest?
Stewardias.
Yeah.
I love the peeling bark of Stewardias. And you know what is one of my favorites, which is right off the back patio? We have a Virginia magnolia, which is our native magnolia. And the reason we put it there is because it handles really wet soils, and that's pretty low-lying, and it tends to stay really wet there in the spring. I tried some other shrub or other trees there that didn't survive because it was too waterlogged, but the Virginia magnolia is beautiful, and it's what's considered to be semi-evergreen, but it still has all its leaves, and they're green on the top and like a silvery white on the bottom. It's a multi-stemmed tree. Ours is probably maybe 15, 18 feet tall now, and it gets these amazing white, they're a magnolia flower. They're white, and they smell in the evening. The variety I have is called Moon Glow, and it's open. They're open all day, but they release their fragrance in the evening.
And it blooms reliably because it's a native, right?
Absolutely.
It's not like the ones that get frosted.
Yep, tough as nails. I did have a little bit of trouble in the wintertime because it's one of the few things that still has leaves in the winter with the deer nibbling the lower leaves. So we do kind of surround it with a little fence in the wintertime just to keep the deer away from it.
Well, I talked to our outdoors writer, Bob Fry, because I wondered, when can I take the protection off my smaller trees as far as rubbing, as far mm-hmm. as not the deer eating it, but the bucks rubbing it? And he said it's time.
Okay.
He said the rut's over. They'll start losing their antlers here in a week or so. So they're not rubbing anymore. So I've got like a Coosa dogwood and a Stewardia. That's what made me think of it. I have a Stewardia that has the, you know, like drainage, plastic drainage pipe around it that stopped them from the bucks from rubbing. So
yeah. And you don't want to leave that on year round because you can get some pests and things in there. So it's good. That's very good to know.
Congratulations to Carolyn Gibsonia, winner of that $100 holiday gift card from the good folks at Sorgles. We'd love to hear from you. All of our lines are open. Doug and Jess are ready to go to the phones right after a short commercial message. 866-391-1020. All right, ready to go to the phone. So let's start off by saying hello to Marianne. Marianne, how are you? Welcome to the Organic Gardeners. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good, but when I saw you up there on the board, I realized I didn't send you your DVD.
Oh, that's okay. I think it's amazing that you still have it. So, you know, that you hung on to it. So that's fine.
He was just going, where did I put her address?
Where did I put her address?
He's got it somewhere.
Okay.
Before we get going, tell him what that film is that you loaned me.
Oh, well, it's It's a classic. It's from the 1990s, and it won, I think, awards at Sundance or something. But it's called My Father's Garden. And Doug was so generous. Years ago, friends and I put on a program at Boscov's in Butler at the mall, and we showed the film and had different organic farmers speak afterwards. And Doug mentioned it on the program. But it's a beautiful film about the filmmaker's father, who was an orange grove. He had orange groves in Florida. And she's just thinking back to her childhood and the way her dad farmed with chemicals. And then she compares it to Fred Kirschenman, who transitioned, I think, was it 3,000 acres, Doug, to organic. And this was way back before anyone was doing it. So she just kind of goes back and forth between the two different kinds of farming, you know, conventional and organic, and compares and contrasts and gives a history of, you know, chemicals and...
Yeah, it's interesting because the filmmaker's father, he didn't know that he was putting himself at risk. It was when it first...
It's just what you did.
Yeah, when
then.
It first came out, it, you know, that first... You know, we always talk about those first couple of years in Florida, it was like... Wow, no bugs. This is amazing. And there's actually footage in there of him, like, with a giant hose, no protection.
Spraying.
And oh yeah, it's an amazing film. So, what was your question today?
Oh, okay. My radio reception's not coming in very well. And Jess, I couldn't hear where you got your honey berries.
Yeah, so the honey berry, and I'm glad that you called about this, actually, because I should have clarified when we were talking in the first segment about honey berries that the ones that I saw for sale and that I bought are plants. You're not buying them and planting them from seed.
Right.
You're buying the plant, right. So the ones I saw were in the Young Seeds, J-U-N-G, Seeds catalog. But which just came out. I actually got my plants years ago from Rain Tree Nursery.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, Rain Trees, and there might be some local places that have them as well. So because, again, they're just starting to sort of pick up steam here and people are really just starting to recognize them. So I would also check with your favorite local nursery and see if they either can get them or they might already have them in stock.
Okay. And you eat these raw like blueberries?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh. Right off the plant. Yep.
Oh, boy. Cool. When you asked that, Jessica's eyes lit up and she was smiling.
They are so good. And if nobody has, it's one of those things that, you know, you think you know all the fruits or you think you know all the vegetables, right? And then you find something like this and it just... I often think that with our friend Nikki Jabor, who lives in Nova Scotia, and she grows all these global vegetables. You know, we think when we go into the grocery store that we have a huge selection, but we really don't when you think about all these varieties that exist out there.
There's a lot of cool stuff out there to grow.
Yeah. I can't wait to see if honeyberries someday make their way onto the shelves of grocery stores.
Well,
it's such a short period of time that they're ripe for. They really are, you know, they don't have a long, long season, but there's different varieties that mature at different, you know, a week earlier or a week later, just kind of like you can do with blueberries as well.
Uh-huh.
So if you see that and you get have room for a couple of plants, you choose a male and female of varieties that are compatible, but then try to choose a couple different types that mature, you know, a few weeks apart.
Okay, I think Miller's Catalog Nursery used to have them. I used to circle things. I'd go through the catalog circling things I wanted.
They've combined with Stark now, and so
yeah, I knew they had.
Probably find that they're.
I'm sure Stark has them. Yeah. Yeah.
And just quickly, the beetle banks or the beetle bump.
Uh-huh.
Could you tell me some plants you could, if you had a little space in your garden to make like a beetle bump, what plant?
Sure. So we've talked about this on the show before, and I've written about it a lot. And it is, it's literally a bump or raised berm that's built somewhere in the garden, usually really close to the vegetable garden or in it. And it's planted with native bunch grasses. So these are native grasses that grow in clumps. And what it is it becomes a habitat for predaceous ground beetles. And ground beetles go out to the garden. They're beneficial insects. They go out into the garden at night and they scour your plants for pests. They eat everything from cabbage worms and slugs and snails to asparagus beetle larvae to Mexican bean beetle larvae. And so it's creating a habitat for these beneficials.
Big? How big?
Well, I mean, if you're a farm, you want to do a whole big long row, right? Every couple of rows of crops. But in a backyard garden, I would say if you probably go, if you're going to do a beetle bump and do like a circle, I would say probably maybe 5 feet wide, 4 feet wide, and then mound it up. It should be mounded up like about 12 inches up above the ground level so that it's, because ground beetles, they like to sort of go upwards to take shelter during the day where it's dry, and then they come down and go into your crops at night because they feed nocturnally.
You're planting it with what?
Native bunch grasses. So these would be things like switchgrass, any of the panicums, any of our native buffalo grass, right, that are native to, I'd say, probably pretty much anywhere in the United States, and they grow in a clump. So they don't spread through runners. They're in a clump. So any of those ornamental grasses, basically, at the garden center that are native, you could choose to plant in that beetle bump.
Could you use, like, little blue stem?
Little blue stem. Side oats, grandma, would be another one. I'll think of some more, but yes, there's a lot. And so you can, if you Google beetle bump and then my name, you'll find probably a couple articles that I've written about it that have actual plant lists in them.
Okay.
And that will help as well.
Do you put anything else in there or just the grass?
Just the grasses. And then you only mow them down once, and you would want to just, you know, hand mow them, like use a lopper to cut them down. If you want to do it at all. Some people just let them, you know, like they would in the prairie, they would just naturally die. But if you feel like you need to have it a little more well tended, you can do that with a pair of loppers. You can cut it down in the very early spring down to like 6 or 8 inches tall.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Let me know how it works out. They're really cool. I've seen them in home settings and then in farm settings as
Sounds kind of funny. Search my name in beetle bump and something will come up.
I've written about them a number of times. I interviewed this Gwendolyn Ellen, who's a professor at Oregon State University. And this is where, because they have such a huge slug and snail problem in the Pacific Northwest, they've been doing a lot of research about beetle bumps there and how ground beetles can help farmers and homeowners control those pests.
All right, coming up, Mom, more of your phone calls and that gift certificate from Janoski. We've got two more full segments with Doug and Jess. If you'd like to join the festivities today, you can join us because we have some lines available at 866-391-1020. First day of Hanukkah, great holiday, of course. We've got that and also Christmas celebration recipes, traditions, and more coming up with Joe and Frank Dentisi. He'll be here today on the Coons Cooking Hour, and then Heffron Tillis and Your Money and You, and then we wrap up our day with the Coons Market Black and Gold Sunday Show at 11 a.m. Melinda, coming up in 2 minutes with your news at 7:30. Yes, they are. And right now, if you're the 10th caller at 412-922-1020, you're going to win an amazing $25 gift certificate from Janoski's. Looking for the 10th caller, 412-922-1020. Let's say hi to Alex up next for Doug and Jess. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning. I've heard Jess refer to red buds as dead buds.
Mm-hmm.
I have one that's about 15 years old, and it's every year it loses a limb. I'm thinking I'm going to take it out after it blossoms this year. I guess two questions. What causes that? And second, is a flowering dogwood a good tree that's going to not have these problems?
Okay, so yes, I do call red buds dead buds because
I can't believe he knows that because we haven't said that often. I like to tease you about that, but whenever I talk about red buds anywhere in the area, I always say my radio partner Jessica calls them dead buds.
Yeah, and it's a shame because they are such lovely, incredible trees. I still recommend that people plant them, but
I killed one.
They'll break your heart because they'll be in their glory, and then this is exactly what happens, Alex. One limb at a time, they die back. There is some fungal issues they can get, a canker. There's some wilts they can get, but it also is just the nature of this tree. This is just a short-lived tree compared to, you know, an oak or a maple or something like that.
I'm thinking of like a country western song, one limb at a time.
One limb at a time.
One limb at a time.
But they also sow seeds, and so that's sort of their life cycle. They regenerate really easily because they do also produce all those seeds. So
if you could, though, talk about what a red bud is so people know. It's that tree that blooms early in the season.
You can see it on the turnpike, on the sides of the turnpike. It has these lovely pink flowers that it's in the pea and bean families, and the flowers are really close onto the stems or onto the branches of the tree. And the flowers are actually edible, and they have like a really interesting sort of like they taste like a little bit of a spring pea, like you would pick out of the vegetable garden.
Hmm. I never knew that.
Yeah, I would, if it were me and I had that dead bud, red bud, I would just let it go until there was pretty much no branches left, and then I would get rid of it.
What do you think about a dogwood?
I think dogwood is a really good choice. Our native dogwood, Cornus florida, is prone to anthracnose, which is a fungal disease. If you want one that isn't, you might want to go with one of the hybrids. There's some hybrids between our native dogwood and Cornus kusa, which is a Japanese dogwood. And these hybrids are bred with that disease resistance in there. So I think there's like a whole series of them that are stellar. They're called the stellar dogwoods. There's a one called Wolf Eyes. It's like a variegated dogwood. So those also have the built-in disease resistance, which is an extra bonus for them.
So basically, the dogwood should be a hybrid of some sort.
I would recommend it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Cornus florida. I mean, it's a beautiful tree and it's native, and I always recommend planting native when you can. But this is an example where if you go with one of those hybrids that has a disease resistance, you're not going to be having to spray or treat the tree at all.
And I'm telling you, that Wolf Eyes and the other ones like it, those variegated ones are so cool looking.
Yeah, they are really neat.
I killed a couple of those too, though.
Well, let me address the flowering crab just for a minute. I have one, and it is a spectacular tree. I love it, except for all the crab apples that come in the fall.
Yeah.
But it is a beautiful tree. Is it susceptible to diseases?
Yeah, so some of them are. So again, here we go, where variety selection makes all the difference in the world. So most of the old school crab apple trees would get apple scab, which makes the leaves turn yellow and they all fall off really early, and the tree looks terrible all summer long, even though it blooms beautifully.
I have one of those right outside my kitchen window.
Yeah.
It was there when I moved in. Actually, a pine tree fell on it, and I'm trying to get it to come back. So.
Yeah. But
I love the blooms.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. But the thing is, some of these newer varieties, and new meaning like the last 20 or 30 years, are scab resistant. So when you choose one, I'd make sure that you do your research and pick one that's scab resistant. And there are tons of varieties.
They have some doubles out there. You know me and my doubles.
I like the coral burst one, which is like that corally pink.
There are some very cool crab apples out there.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks,
Alex. For calling.
All right, congratulations, Robert Gibsoni, winner of that gift certificate from Janoski's. Let's take another call before the next break. Here's Kathy in Delmont. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, guys. Hi, Doug and Jess and
How
Rob. So my question is regarding a row of arborvitae that I planted 12 feet west of my house, and I planted these 20 years ago, and when I planted them, they began at approximately 3 feet tall, and now they are 40 feet tall. And I'm concerned about them being blown over in all these storms we get. I have a 100-yard exposure. There's nothing around me in the east, north, and south, okay? Mm-hmm. And these trees are planted north to south on the west side of my house.
Okay.
And they're 20 feet away from my house, and there's about 20 arborvitaes, and they're spaced 4 feet apart.
Yeah, so
when
they
are basically a giant hedge right now. They're a giant wall of arborvitae.
And when you get wet winds where you live, they're coming in westerly, so that's your main concern? They're blowing?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm afraid, and I don't have any money to put into this. I have $500 probably that I spend every summer with house projects. I do a little bit every year.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what to do, and I'm wondering if there's some kind of fertilizer I can beef up the roots. I can't afford to have a tree company come out.
Well, here's the thing. The good news is that those arborvitae were planted when they were itty-bitty. And what that tells me is that if they're that tall after being planted when they're, you know, 2-3 feet tall, they have a very established, deep, spreading root system. And that is exactly what you want. If you had planted them and they were already 10, 12 feet, that might be an issue, but you have a good root system on those trees that they're that big. I would personally, for me, like, I wouldn't worry too much about them unless you start to see them leaning or you start to see some dieback on them. You know, my grandmother had a similar situation at her house where her whole backyard was sort of surrounded by these arborvitae that were like 40 feet tall, and they were huge and they were beautiful, and they're still standing. And she planted, you know, she's long gone and planted them when she was a new bride. So they can, they're very long lived.
And I know that feeling when you do live near trees and you have one of those crazy 60 mile an hour windstorm, it doesn't feel very good. But in my situation, I've been very lucky in that the trees have become established, and I agree with you. I think she'll be fine. It's hard not to worry about it.
It is. And the thing about arborvitaes, too, is that there's very few diseases that are going to get them that you won't see coming. So if you're seeing branch dieback, if you're seeing, the tree with, and there's not even really many diseases or pests that are going to get arborvitae, and that's one of the reasons so many people plant them. So I personally think you should set your mind at ease a little bit about them unless you start to see leaning. You could have the folks from Davy Tree come out and assess that. They do come out for free and do an evaluation and take a look, and they can tell you whether or not the trees are healthy or if there's rot in them, they can let you know that. So that might be worth a call to them just for your own peace of mind as well.
Okay, thank you. And I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
So just for more information, they're starting to kind of, I don't know what you would call it, like spread at the bottom. So like the bottom branches are starting to fall outward.
Okay.
And, like horizontally, they're spreading. Like they're so big. And then when I get snow, it happens also. And I usually go out there and shake off the snow as high as I can reach up.
Mm-hmm.
And my second follow-up would be, does topping them help?
I would definitely not recommend
topping them. Never top the tree.
You're going to change
everything, and you're going to risk a lot by doing that too.
And you're opening up a wound, which can be a route for disease entrance and pest issues. So I would definitely not recommend that. On the bottom, you can knock off the snow if you want, but the truth is most of those plants will sort of rebound when the snow melts. It might take them till spring to do that. But, you know, certainly in heavy snow, it wouldn't hurt to do it as long as you're not breaking the branches. You just have to be real careful of that.
Coming back in just a moment. All right, Joe in Greensburg, up for Doug and Jess here in the home stretch of the Organic Gardeners. How are you, Joe?
Fine. How are you?
We're doing great. What's on your mind?
Okay, I have a Christmas cactus. It's probably 15, 20 years old. And my wife and I disagree on watering it. Now, should I water it just like all houseplants or less frequently?
This is a great question.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're right.
He didn't say who was who.
No, you're right. Whichever way you want to do it, you're right. But let's do it. Let's tell them the right way to do it.
Well, here's the deal. Like, Christmas cactus doesn't deserve the name cactus because it's actually native region is in South America in a tropical humid rainforest. This is where this plant grows. It's an epiphyte, which means it roots itself and grows in trees. It doesn't actually even grow in the ground. It grows up in trees, like much like an orchid does. And so Christmas cactus are from humid, warm, tropical climates. And so we need to water them as such. So you would, in your case, want to water it as you described it, like a regular house plant.
Then I was wrong. My wife was correct.
Go wife.
Okay.
Oh, Joe.
I thank you very much.
You're welcome. We settled a score on that one, Doug.
We did.
This is a thing about Christmas cactus. We think automatically because it has a cactus name in there that it's, you know, should be watered sparingly, that's not the case.
Joe, I keep mine on the dry side, so.
Well, I'm not saying you want it to be like waterlogged all the time, but
not like a cactus.
Like a cactus, exactly. You need to water it, you know, every 7 to 10 days on a regular schedule like you would with the rest of your house plants.
Well, one thing we could think about doing this time of the year if you want to be out in the garden is a little bit of pruning.
Indeed.
You know, I was actually walking through the woods the other day, and I've been working on these actually kind of wild flowering crabs, and they've just gotten all wispy. You know, I really didn't pay much attention to them, and I've started to see them now, and so I pruned one pretty heavily last year, and it looks so much better. And there's two more out there, so I'm going to get after them. And you got to take your time, though. You can't take too much off, you know, only a third at the most, and just, again, real careful. Take a couple things off and then step back and take a look at it, see what needs to go, crossing branches, branches growing inside, you know, where they shouldn't be, and you get the hang of it.
And again, we're never topping. We're never removing the leader branch of any tree or branches of any tree, because that is a really poor pruning practice. And so when we're doing our deciduous trees and shrubs this time of year, keep that in mind. You never want to remove that growing point.
Anything new for you this year? Are you thinking about anything gardening-wise, or have you just been taking it easy and waiting till the season
breaks?
Well,
you know, it's exciting when you see those catalogs coming, and I was looking through some of them and looking through my old photographs, and I know what I'm eating more of vegetable-wise, so I'm excited. I'm going to do some purple Brussels sprouts this year, which I can't wait to grow, the Rubicon or something like
that's called.
I want to try those this year. I want to do sweet potatoes in containers. I have not done sweet potatoes in maybe 3 or 4 years, and I've done them in a big pot on the patio, and I want to try them in some of those fabric planter bags.
Look at the Sandhill Preservation website catalog.
Okay.
They've got like 200 different varieties, and you know,
we need a short season.
Right, you're always talking
here
about getting one of those ones that's ready in like 90 days or something.
Yep.
And it's a pretty cool catalog with some really off the beaten path, not only sweet potatoes, but also tomatoes. They have some, if you really want to go off the grid and find something nobody else is growing, which I like doing, but I'm coming around to kind of growing the same stuff again over and over again, especially when it comes to tomatoes.
Yeah. I go through phases like that, right? New things and then your old standbys.
Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
All right, guys. Have a good holiday. Thank you.
Thanks. Happy holidays,
all
everyone.
All right. Sounds good. Listen, stay tuned. News at 8 with Melinda Roeder. And then coming up, it's Joe and Frank Dentisi, holiday recipes, traditions, and more on the Coons Cooking Hour on KDKA Radio. Good morning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times? You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.